This is Nachyomi, Sefer Shemuel Aleph, chapter 14. The situation facing Israel is a very difficult one, but Shaul refrains from taking any action to resolve it. After the rebuke of Shemuel in the previous chapter, he becomes rather passive. Yonatan, his son, accompanied by his armor-bearer, secretly crosses over to the garrison of the Pelishtim. He devises an unusual strategy to gauge and to predict what is going to occur next. On the surface, it seems like some kind of an occult action, some kind of a superstitious practice, but we can understand it in a logical, rational way as well. He says that if the Pelishtim invite him to come up, their garrison was located in an elevated area relative to where he would be approaching. So if they told him to come up, that was an indication that the Jews would rise up and would prevail against the Pelishtim. If they told Yonatan and his servant, his escort, to remain in place and they would come down, that meant that the Jews were going to go down and they should be concerned. Now we can understand this logically, that if they invited Yonatan and his assistant to come to them, that meant they didn't want to leave their position. They were feeling insecure. They wanted the protective borders of their camp and the physical elevation as an advantage. Whereas if they're willing to leave the protective area and to come down, that indicates that they feel a lot stronger about their position. They feel a lot more confident, and that's perhaps an indication that their morale is stronger than one would have hoped, and then that they might be able to defeat the Jews rather than the other way around. The Pelishtim tell Yonatan to come up to them. Emboldened by what he interprets as a sign of victory, Yonatan proceeds to attack the Pelishtim together with his armor-bearer in their camp. Chaos ensues. There's such panic that the Pelishtim begin killing one another, incapable of distinguishing between friend and foe. The Israelite camp notices the havoc that's erupted in the garrison of the Pelishtim. They don't know exactly what's going on. They investigate and discover that Yonatan is missing, and infer from this that he must be responsible. At first, Shaul approaches the Kohen to seek Hashem's word through the Urim V'Tumim, but when he sees that the chaos, the mass hysteria on the Pelishti side is really out of control, he decides that delaying any further might mean losing the opportunity to take a decisive action. So therefore, he wants to move forward and use the confusion in the Pelishti camp as an opportunity to triumph over them. So Shaul leads his men forward to vanquish the Pelishtim. They do quite well in routing the Pelishtim. Along the way, Shaul imposes an oath upon the people that they not eat or drink that day until the battle is concluded. One possible meaning of this is to teach them that the success in the battle is not dependent on their physical strength, but is dependent upon Hashem's blessing and support. Yonatan rejoins the troops and travels with them through a forest in which they see a stream of honey. Nobody else touches the honey, of course, knowing about the oath, but Yonatan, not being aware of the oath, goes ahead and takes a taste of it. Some people point out to him that this is in violation of the order issued by his father, and rather than apologize and pull back, he actually criticizes his father. He says that it was short-sighted to impose such an oath, that they would be doing better had the people eaten and had the opportunity to restore some energy to recharge. They would have been able to defeat the Pelishtim even more successfully had they eaten the day of the battle. And the verses do indeed indicate that they were very tired in the fight because of the lack of food. So Yonatan openly criticizes his father, and we'll see that this is going to be significant. Now, at the conclusion of the battle, the famished Jews descend upon the spoils and begin slaughtering the animals and eating the meat. It's brought to the attention of King Shaul that they are eating on the blood, meaning right in the presence of the blood. As they're slaughtering, they're eating right there. Now, the commentaries discuss what exact prohibition this is violating, since in the oral tradition, we interpret the verse of Lo tochilu al adam, not eating on the blood, as not a literal injunction, but having one of many possible metaphoric meanings. So exactly what the violation was is not clear, but whatever it was, Shaul instructs his officers to roll a large rock into a place that would become the designated spot for slaughtering, so that all the animals would be brought to that spot, slaughtered there, and then the people would eat away from the blood, so as to avoid whatever occult practice or whatever idolatrous ritual was associated with eating next to the blood, which seems to be the problem. Now, Shaul proposes that the troops of Israel continue attacking the Pelishtim through the night till the morning, in order to solidify their victory. and consolidate their gains. Before pursuing this course of action, he seeks the word of Hashem to confirm that it is proper, the proper choice. However, Shaul receives no response from the Urim V'Tumim, which indicates that the divine presence has departed from the camp. This concerns him greatly, and he wants to find out who's responsible for this change. He says that whoever is the perpetrator will be killed, even if it's Yonatan, his son. This, of course, indicates or seems to imply that he had a sense that it might be his son who was responsible. A lottery is conducted, and Yonatan is identified as the perpetrator. He confesses to the sin he committed in partaking of the honey and accepts the judgment that he's condemned to die. Shaul once again swears that he will, in fact, kill Yonatan for having caused the divine presence to leave Israel. However, the people intervene and defend Yonatan. They say that it was Yonatan's heroic infiltration of the garrison of the Pelishtim that led to the victory in the first place. How can they kill him? Shaul relents and Yonatan's life is spared. The chapter concludes with a description of Shaul's distinguished career of successful military operations against many of the enemies of Israel. And it talks about his marriages, his children, and his cabinet and his army, all of which are the components of his regime, his kingdom. The story contains at least two allusions to narratives in the Book of Shofatim. Yonatan's crossing over to the camp of the Pelishtim reminds us of the story of Gideon, who goes over to the camp of the Midianim to listen in on their conversations and find out about their morale. He hears about the dream that one Midianite is telling another, and this emboldens him. So too, we have Yonatan, a similar situation. Shaul and here as well, just like in the case of the of Gideon, in his surprise attack on the Midianim, they start killing one another, just like happens here in the story of Yonatan. Shaul's oath, which he unwittingly condemns his own son, obviously is similar to the story of Yiftach, who takes an oath when he goes out to battle that leads to a condemning of his own child unwittingly. Now, these literary and thematic parallels may have deeper roots, but at least on the surface, what they do is highlight the fact that the Book of Shmuel is the completion, the culmination of the stories in the Book of Shofetim, that the career and character of Shaul cannot be fully understood without reference to the predecessors in the Book of Shofetim. We have to look at these stories through that lens. Now, the episode of Shaul's oath illustrates his tragic inability to be decisive in the face of pressure. Shaul invokes the name of God numerous times to back up his conviction that whoever has caused the divine presence to depart will be killed. Yet, and even after he discovers it's Yonatan, he reiterates the promise. And yet, in the end, the people push back and insist that he not carry out his course of action and honor his word. And he backtracks, even against a sacred vow, even in the face of violation of the Ten Commandments. He defers to popular opinion. One may be tempted to argue that Yonatan's transgression wasn't that serious and perhaps that Shaul's oath was not warranted. The only thing is, it's not really Yonatan's violation, it's not really his sin that is the problem, but it was the way in which he responded to the discovery that he had done something wrong. The real sin of Yonatan was in his reaction to the people who informed him of the prohibition. He didn't apologize or behave modestly, but instead he ridiculed his father's decision publicly, undermining his father's authority and indicating in, more or less that the people would have been better off not listening to Shaul, not abiding by his instructions. This disrespectful and rebellious speech really takes away from Shaul's prestige in the eyes of his people, could have been potentially very, very damaging, maybe was very damaging, and therefore was indeed worthy of a severe response, which it did not get. Shaul's failure to punish his son, even after swearing to do so more than once in the name of God, was a monumental mistake. Now, even if it's true that his hasty rush to promise to kill the perpetrator without investigating the details was itself ill-conceived, still, once the promise was made, once the commitment was made, violating it was a very serious error on his part. It illustrates the distorted set of priorities in which honor of the people ranked above the honor of God. Ironically, he committed this sin immediately after rebuking the nation for disgracing God by eating next to blood. And just after he had constructed an altar in the name of God, he goes ahead and violates an oath made in the name of God. So this demonstrates to us Shaul's shaky ability to stay true to his convictions and to remain committed to the service of Hashem in his leadership of the people.